have to get this out of my system first. Some of you know that Janice and I and Kendra actually just made a trip to the Superdome this last part of this week. Got in last night. Our son-in-law's team was playing for the state championship, and we won. And so we had a flying trip that was a lot of fun. Actually, for those of you high school fans, and there's a lot in Texas, pretty interesting little piece of information here from the Louisiana state playoffs. The 4A, the 5A, and the 1A teams that won the state championship were all from Monroe or West Monroe, Louisiana. So there's lots of celebration in Mudville today. Whenever I was a kid in hauled hay, when we finally got to that last bale in the evening and were putting it in the barn, somebody would inevitably say, "Hey, this is the one we've been looking for all day." Well, this lesson may be the one that you've been looking for about 20 weeks here. So this is the end of our series of lessons on the fundamentals of Christian ministry. And in this series, I hope that you have realized that every one of us has gifts, and God holds us accountable for using those gifts. And one day we'll stand before Him and we will give an account of how we have used these gifts that He's given to us. And also, I hope that you've realized that you don't have to have some extraordinary, fantastic, blow people away gift in order to please your Father. That the greatest works in reality are done in the quiet manner. And the greatest things in the kingdom are accomplished, and the things that form the glue that hold God's body together are those small things. And I also hope that you realize that we can love and support and encourage those who have different gifts than we do. In other words, everybody doesn't have to be like me. And sometimes I need to be told that. And also, I hope that you've learned that the gifts that seem to be the most insignificant are actually the most vital, the serving gifts. And that there is an almost unlimited number of ways that a gift can be put to use to bring glory to God and used as a channel to share the things that God has given to you. And that's the purpose for which He gave us those gifts. There's an incredibly wide variety of blessings that the church offers. I don't know if you've ever stopped and thought about that, but the Lord's church is a blessing to the community in which we exist, and we, as well as we're a blessing to each other. And it is by the church using the gifts that God has given to us that those blessings are available. Some have gifts that enable us to effectively convey the message of God. Others have gifts which enable us to effectively demonstrate God's love in practical use. We looked at gifted men, apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors, teachers. We looked at the temporary sign gifts given to the early church to confirm word which was first being delivered, miracles, healings, and tongues. And now we're examining the permanent edifying gifts, and we've broken them into two categories, speaking gifts and serving gifts. The speaking gifts are prophecy, the word of knowledge, word of wisdom, teaching, and exhortation. And the serving gifts, thus far we have examined leadership, serving, giving, and mercy. So as we wrap this up, then in reality, I wish I could say I was finishing out with a big bang. Actually, as it turns out, the ones that I struggled with a little bit of where to put them kind of got pushed here to the end. And the first one is the gift of faith. And I find that really interesting that that's in the list of 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 9. It talks about the gifts that the Spirit is given or given for the common good. And one of those, it goes on and lists those gifts, and one of them says to some, gift of faith. And so I think about that and I say, okay, what does this mean that some have this special gift from God? Well, I know this. I have to start with what I know. I know that this gift is not saving faith, because all Christians have that faith, the faith that is required to trust God enough that he imparts his righteousness to us. And so it must be that extraordinary, if you will, supernatural capacity for believing God. It is believing, the capacity to believe and trust in God in the face of incredibly overwhelming odds and conditions. It is that mountain-moving faith that's spoken of by Jesus in Matthew chapter 17. When he descended from the Mount of Transfiguration, he was followed on his heels by Peter, James, and John. And when they got to the bottom of the mountain, there was a father who had brought his son, who had violent seizures, to the remaining disciples that were at the foot of the mountain to be healed, but they couldn't heal him. And so they were in a dilemma. There was lots of arguing going on, and those disciples were involved in that. And so Jesus took over, and Jesus healed the boy. And then after the crowd had left, those disciples came to Jesus, and they said, "Why couldn't we heal him?" So in Matthew 17, 20, Jesus said, "Because you have so little faith." And then he explains, "I'll tell you the truth, if you have faith as small as a mustard seed, you can say that this mountain move from here to there, and it will move. Nothing will be impossible for you." Wow. And we talk about whether or not he really meant that or not, or whether he meant that literally or whatever. However you want to take that, this is a degree of faith that knows no obstacles, isn't it? And if you stop and think about that, it is a gift to have that kind of faith. 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 2 teaches the same thing, except it's showing it from a completely different standpoint. It is showing the necessity that all of these gifts must be motivated by love. And he starts out in 1 Corinthians chapter 13, in verse 2, he says, "And though I have all faith and could remove mountains," and then he goes on and says, "and have not love, it profits me nothing." And so the very fact that he keeps saying this, "though I have all faith that could remove mountains," this is a gift that can lay hold of all of God's promises, that can accomplish incredible things in this world because of God's power. In Matthew chapter 21, verse 22, the disciples had just witnessed the withering of the cursed fig tree. They passed by that morning. Jesus looked over, and there was a fig tree that held the promise of having figs. He got over there. There were none, and he cursed it. And he said, "May nobody ever eat from fruit from you again." And that afternoon, as they came by, they looked over, and that fig tree was withered. And they were amazed it happened so quickly, and they were asking about it. And Jesus said, "I tell you the truth, if you have faith and do not doubt, not only can you do what was done to the fig tree, but you can also say to this mountain, 'Go throw yourself in the sea,' and it will be done. If you believe, you will receive whatever you ask for in prayer." And I say that's a pretty extraordinary level of faith, wouldn't you? That kind of faith, it seems to me, is connected with prayer. And it also seems to me that this faith activates God. He works in response to a prayer like that. It moves him. When someone comes asking something that is outside the realm of possibility for us, and that person comes with nothing doubting, believing that God can and will do that. And when you stop and analyze that, I think we would probably conclude that it takes mega faith in order to ask something like that. You're risking. As long as you never do ask, then you don't risk finding out. But when you do ask, you're putting yourself out there, aren't you? You're putting your faith out there. And whenever someone asks, he says, if any man asks doubting, he doesn't need to think he's going to receive anything from God. And so when you ask in complete trust, with no doubts, that's a gift, isn't it? A gift of faith. And there's an example of such faith in Matthew chapter 27. Paul was on a ship bound for Rome, and a terrible storm arose. And they were so afraid that they had dropped ropes and passed them under the ship and bound the ship together with ropes so that it wouldn't just come all to pieces out there in the middle of this storm. And they had dropped a sea anchor over, one that just provided a drag to keep the ship straight in the middle of all this storm. And they were just riding the wind, and everybody thought that they were going to be killed. There wasn't any doubt in anybody's mind that they were going to all die and perish out here. And Paul spoke up, and he said, whenever he noticed that the sailors were secretly trying to drop the lifeboat off the side, and they were going to try to save themselves, then he went to the captain of the ship, and he said, "You better stop that. Cut it loose. Cut the only possible escape avenue that you can see, cut it loose. And if you'll do that, then there'll not be one single life lost." And they were so affected by that that they cut that lifeboat loose. Now, that's a pretty incredible thing to ask, isn't it? The only hope that they have at this time for salvation, cut it loose, let it go. And they cast their food, they cast everything overboard, and as a matter of fact, not a single life was lost. This is a special kind of faith. James chapter 5 speaks of the value and power of prayer of a righteous man that's offered in faith. And he starts out, when he says it, and then he wants to illustrate it. He says, Elijah was a man just like we are. Now stop and let that sink in, because we don't think of Elijah being a man just like we are. But he says, in this respect, Elijah was a man just like we are. And he prayed that it wouldn't rain, and for 3.5 years it didn't rain a drop. We thought we had Elijah around here this summer, didn't we, in Texas, didn't we? And then he said he prayed again, and it rained, and it nourished the earth and the crops. What's his point? Well, his point he makes, the prayer, the fervent prayer of a righteous man, gets a lot done, doesn't it? Faith. This gift of faith is a special gift that edifies others, as do all the gifts when properly and enthusiastically used. You go through a list of the heroes of faith, as we call them in Hebrews chapter 11. Noah, Abraham, Moses, Joshua, David. And you look at their life and the effect that it had on those around them, and you'll see the kind of effect that this level of faith has on others. It strengthens people around you. Don't you like to be around somebody who has a great faith, whose faith doesn't waver in the face of difficulty and hardship? Boy, doesn't that inspire you to also be that kind of person in the face of overwhelming obstacles? And everybody around such a person is strengthened. They're calm when everything's going to pieces, and there's no reason to be calm. They see God's hand in everything. Today, there are people with this gift who don't see the obstacles. Oh, it's not that they're ignorant. It's not that they're blind. They just are not particularly affected by obstacles, because they believe if it's God's will, it's going to happen. God's going to do it. And so they proceed with that. You may have heard me speak of a friend of mine who is lives in Poland. He's a missionary. His name is Mike Davidov. Some of you may know him. But He has been, every time I've ever been with him, he has been an encouragement to me. And one particular time, one of the first times that I spent a long time with him was I took a trip with him to Austria and Hungary and Romania and Bulgaria and Yugoslavia. And you know it's been a while, because some names of some of those countries have changed now. But anyway, we were taking food to orphanages in Romania, and I was delivering some Bibles in Romania just after the government, Ceausescu, was shot. And Mike Davidov was the leader of that group, and we had about 3 pretty good-sized trucks that we were taking food to orphanages and so forth. And I learned something on that trip. I was really encouraged on that trip, because we left to go to all these countries, and we didn't have a single visa for one of them, and you had to have a visa to get in every one of them. And I thought, we're not going to get past the first border. If we do, we're going to spend days and, you know, trying to get visas in all these countries. But when we would get to the line of the country, the border of the country, and we were driving these pretty good-sized trucks, he would just drop over in the ditch and keep driving sometimes as much as a half a mile or maybe three quarters of a mile, passing cars that were all in line waiting to get through the checkpoint. And we would pull right up to the checkpoint. He would come back and say, y'all stay in the truck. He would go in there. It might take him an hour sometimes. He would come out and he would walk around every truck passing out the visas every time. And I just think, okay, you know, this was really neat. You know, he's not going to be able to do that every time. Every single time he did it. And we lost very little time at the borders. And I talked to him about it. And you know, he was kind of a little bit flabbergasted that I expressed amazement at it. And he said, Ken, this is the Lord's work here. The Lord can get us a visa. The Lord can do whatever, you know. And so it's really an encouragement to be around somebody like that. It changes your life. It gives you the kind of perspective that God wants you to have. And I've also noticed that quite often, I'm not saying this is a blanket statement, but quite often missionaries have that kind of faith. It takes a kind of a special person to go in the first place. And you better believe that it's God's work that you're doing if you're going to take yourself or your family to a foreign country somewhere. And so if you have that gift of faith, use it. We need you to use it. God responds to faith. Spend some time on your knees. Encourage all the rest of us by allowing us to see what God does in response to your prayers. It's an incredible life-changing thing that gift is. And then our last gift in 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 10, the King James Version, I think the translators kind of dodged the issue a little bit. They translated it discernment. But more specifically, the New International gets really close to what it is, the ability to distinguish between spirits. Now, that's a little bit harder, okay, than discernment. We can talk about discernment, and that's one thing, but the original text says the ability to distinguish between spirits. And you're either going to make that a miraculous gift, or you're going to make it a gift that's still in practice today. And so I'm going to kind of split the difference and say I think that probably in the first century it may have had some miraculous associated with it. But I think it's still in vogue or still available today. It literally is the ability, diakrino means to judge through or to thoroughly judge, to distinguish between, and then pneuma, spirits. To diakrino between spirits. There is a spirit of evil and there's a spirit of good. There's a spirit of truth and there's a spirit of error. And that's the context for this. It's not difficult to understand the use of this gift in the early church and the need for it. In 1 John chapter 4, verse 1, it says, dear friends, do not believe every spirit, but test the spirits to see whether they're from God, because many false prophets have gone out into the world. And so this evil spirit is associated with a false prophet or a false teacher. You can understand the need for such discerning in the first church. In 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 1 and 2, we ask you, brothers, not to become easily unsettled or alarmed by some prophecy, report, or letter supposed to have come from us, saying that the day of the Lord's already come. Don't let anyone deceive you in any way. And it continues by warning about the coming of the lawless one. And his coming, he said, will be, quote, in accordance with the work of Satan, displayed in all kinds of counterfeit miracles, signs, wonders, and every sort of evil that deceives those who are perishing. And so there was in the first century church a serious problem with some false teachers who came, and they even had what looked like what appeared on the surface to be evidence that what they were saying was true. And this is a tough deal. Who do you believe? Well, they had the miracles, the apostles and those inspired writers had the miracles to prove that. But then there were people who came along and they had counterfeit miracles. They had things that looked like miracles. And so this was a tough time. And it makes me really, really glad that I've got the word today, don't you? That we can go back and we can know, say, hey, show me right here where it says that. Otherwise, I'm not going to believe that. But they didn't have this in its completed form in the first century. And so it was associated with the ability to tell a false teacher from a true teacher. It's not always easy to distinguish a false teacher and a true teacher. We can see that from Paul's admonition to the Ephesian elders in Acts chapter 20, verse 29 and 30, where he said, I know that after I leave, savage wolves will come in among you and not spare the flock. Even from among your own number, men will arise to distort the truth. There's a characteristic of them. To distort the truth in order to draw away disciples after them. And he warns the Corinthian church in 2 Corinthians 11, for such men are false apostles, deceitful workmen, masquerading as apostles of Christ. And no wonder, for Satan himself masquerades as an angel of light. It's not surprising then if his servants masquerade as servants of righteousness. And so it was true then and it's true today. The one who had the gift of discerning spirits received a special insight, a special ability to distinguish between good and evil spirits. Paul exercised this gift in Acts 5 when Ananias and Sapphira came and were supposedly offering true worship to God, and it appeared to everybody else that they were. But Peter said to Ananias, how is it that Satan has so filled your heart that you've lied to the Holy Spirit and kept for yourself some of the money you received for the land? You've not lied to men, but you've lied to God. Now, everybody didn't know that, did they? And you know what? If it was in today's church, even if some folks knew it, they'd let it pass. Because we're tolerant, you see. And you know what? It really makes you seem really spiritual to be tolerant, even of error. And to say, you know, I've learned in my life that there's lots of ways to God, and everybody has to find his own way. That sounds really spiritual, doesn't it? There's only one big problem with that. Jesus said, I am the way. No man comes to the Father except through me. And I am the good shepherd. And if anybody tries to get in the sheepfold without coming through the door, it's me, the same as a thief and a robber. But it sounds so nice, and it sounds so loving, and it sounds so tolerant to say, well, there are many ways to God, and everybody just has to find their own way. We need the discerning of spirits, don't we? We need to be able to tell true from false. So we can see why this gift was necessary in the early church. It served, as it were, as a watchdog to guard the church and its doctrine. And so our question is, has this gift ceased today? And I'm going to say that at least in some form, perhaps somewhat modified, I believe that it still exists. And I'm convinced it is just as important today to protect the church from false and impure and compromised doctrine as it ever was. People, there are some people who are able to cut to the heart of the matter, aren't there? There are some people who are able to listen to someone or read a book or hear a presentation, a religious presentation, and they're able to cut right to the heart of what the premise is and whether it's true or whether it's false. And there are some today in the church who are able to see through arguments and discern error. And I'm going to say to you that that is a gift, an ability that is given by God. In Titus chapter 1, verse 9, that an elder is to be able to refute the gainsayer, those who speak against. It's a warning to those. Let me make flip the coin over for just a moment and say a warning to those who do have this gift. It can easily deteriorate into a proud, critical, condemning attitude. And we really have to be careful about that. Not being against everything. It can degenerate into a judgmental spirit when used apart from its intended purpose. But we do need, and I could say, if it's ever needed, but then every age could say that same thing. If it's ever needed, we need that gift today to be able to distinguish between a teacher of truth and a teacher of error. This series of lessons, as many gifts as we've looked at, is not an exhaustive list. I just think immediately of gifts like craftsmanship. You remember we person this ability and this person this ability to work with gold and filigree gold and this kind of thing. There are other gifts that God's given. Singing certainly is a gift from God, isn't it? Writing, technology, we could list numbers. I don't know how long the list would be of gifts that God has given, but we pretty much confined ourselves to the ones that are in those lists that we've looked at. And so let me just wrap all of this up by saying, remember this. You've been given gifts. God's going to hold you accountable for using those gifts. Work on using those gifts in the environment and from the motivation of love. Love for God, love for your fellow man. Because those gifts are given to you as a way to bless others with what God has done for you. Use your gifts as a steward who will one day give an answer for what God has given to you. And also, expand your maturity by encouraging others to find and use their gifts. It's really a neat thing to see somebody come up to someone else and say, you know what, I've noticed this about you. You really can do this well. And you know what? That person may have never thought that about. They may have never seen themselves that way. And so we can help one another with that. Help each other find our gifts and find ways to use that and encourage one another. It's an incredible thing that God has blessed us with an opportunity to be a part of what He's doing in this world. It really is an incredible privilege that He's given to us. And I hope that you view it that way. And you don't see yourself as just a spectator who comes and gets your ticket punched and then you go about your life. This is your life. This is just where you get your batteries charged up for doing what the Lord wants us to do 7 days a week. Spiritual gifts. God's given you gifts. Let's use them for Him, to glorify Him, to build up His kingdom, and to unify it. While we stand and sing.